The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host, guest, random reptoid, or chupacabra may not necessarily reflect those of AM 950 Radio, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Now, it's time to step into the unknown. There are things people experience but never talk about. A shadow moving in the corner, flickering of the lights, a disembodied voice. We invite you to talk with us, share your story, share your experience, because this isn't just your story, this is our story. This is Ghost Box Radio with Greg Bakken.
And this is Ghost Box Radio on AM 950, where every night we talk about the paranormal, ufology, Bigfoot, and so much more. My name is Greg Bakken, and thank you very much for joining me tonight. I think the big news that we need to start with tonight is the return of Adam, who, the reports of his death has been very much untrue, and I guess that memorial episode we did was a complete waste of time, but that's okay. It's great to have you back.
Thank you. My latest bout with Captain Trips is done with, and thank you for the Andy Kaufman send-off. And
you're very welcome. And Hazleton just said, don't come back. So, oh, I wasn't supposed to say that. Oh, my gosh.
No. I know there's a HIPAA thing. I don't know.
I'm not a doctor, so.
Really? Then who are you?
So you're back. I mean, but you've been better for a while though, right? I mean, it's not like you just like today you're feeling good.
No, I was feeling pretty good last week, but I wanted to get that sense of smell and taste back before I kind of ventured out into the public.
Did that linger?
For up until like Sunday or Monday, I finally got
really
that, back.
That late into it, because it's been about 3 weeks now, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I finally got it back, and it's nice to actually be able to smell things again, taste things again. Haven't lost the
will to live.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And I got to say that last time I had COVID back in 2020, anything like orange, pineapple, anything like that tasted gross. This time, none of my tastes have changed yet.
Okay.
Or at least I haven't tried anything that now is, you know, tastes gross.
The last time you and I spoke, or the last time we saw each other was at the movie theater for Exorcist Believer.
Yeah.
And so we've never talked about it.
No.
So maybe let's talk about it tomorrow.
Okay.
A little bit.
Yeah, because my daughter just watched the first Exorcist this evening before coming in.
That'll be very interesting. One of the great horror films of all time.
Oh, I think so.
And that's a perfect segue. Yes and no, because I'm going to take us back a little before to 1973, but still, it's a fantastic conversation. And, you know, as we are edging towards Halloween, I think it's worthwhile having these conversations. If you may remember last week, we had a conversation with Bill Evenson, we talked about the Universal films. Mainly Frankenstein. But I wanted to bring on a friend of mine who is also an accomplished author, and has done a lot of amazing things. And amongst them, he's written two volumes of a book called Silver Screen. The first volume is 40 Classic Horror Movies, Volume 1 from 1920 to 1941. Anybody who knows me, I'm not a big fan of films with gore. I'm not a fan of, like chainsaws dismembering people. It's not my thing. So what I really wanted to do was talk about the type of movies that I think are fantastic. That's why we had Bill on. But that's why tonight we're going to have on here Stephen Warren Hill. And I really wanted to have this conversation for a while. So, Stephen, welcome to Ghost Box Radio.
Thank you, Greg. Hi.
Hi. How are you doing tonight?
I'm pretty good. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, I'm very happy to be talking about this. And, you know, the thing is, like I said, I mean, so, I mean, I kind of see you as a creature of media. You are somebody who you collect the media. I mean, I do as well, but not on your level. You watch it, you enjoy it, you surround yourself with it. And I have your book, which is pretty much unavailable at the moment. But I love these films from like literally this period of time, 1920 to 1941. Do you have a favorite era of these type of films?
Well, broadly speaking, 30s and 40s. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the thing, I mean, did you get going watching and falling in love with these with like Saturday, like television matinees, that sort of thing? I mean, is that kind of where you started with that?
Yeah, pretty much that. And in Chicago, we had Creature Features on Channel 32. Mm-hmm. You know, they were, when I was a little kid, they were showing the classics. So, you know, you would see Dracula or Frankenstein or the Wolfman rather than the kind of stuff you would get on a Saturday afternoon on an even lesser UHF channel, which would be, you know, a dubbed Japanese movie or something like that. That might have been a really good movie, but even so, it wasn't as highly regarded as a movie like Frankenstein.
I find it, you know, you think back and it's funny how we, I don't know if you ever would have thought, and I certainly never would have thought, that we have so many of these movies, as long as they exist, that they are kind of at our fingertips, especially if you're a collector. But there is something that is still so magical about not having control over it, but having those, like, those Saturday features, or even like Svengoolie now, you know, that there is still something where, you know, we just sit back and we let someone else drive our viewing experience. And there's something I think there's something really magical about that.
I think, you know, younger people, they have all of this at their fingertips, more or less. Mm-hmm. Right? I want to see the Wolfman. You can probably find it within 5 minutes to watch it.
Yeah.
Whereas when we were kids, we would get the TV guide listings and we would go through the TV book and circle the things that we wanted to watch. And then you had to be there in front of the TV right then at that time to watch it. And, you know, sometimes you had to wait years before you could see something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that was the fun part. Now, you know, and we're going to get into the book here, but, you know, you kind of make me think about something there. Now, once again, and I, you know, Steve, I know from all the years of, I mean, I've known you for, damn.
No, we go back to the 80s.
We go back to the 80s, which is odd because I think we're both still just about to hit 30. You know, is there anything that's out there film-wise that exists but you have not been able to see it recently, or that's kind of on your must-have, like, sort of list?
My gosh. You know, off the top of my head, no, because so much of it now, I'm flabbergasted. This is a whole other topic, but I'm flabbergasted by how many movies are being scanned in 2K, 3K, 4K, 8K, right, and being released in high definition that we never would have thought we would even see coming out on home video.
Right.
You know, just 10 years ago. It's astonishing. And even the most obscure movies are coming out on boutique labels. And, you know, we're so grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not just throwing them out there either. They're scanning them in high def. They're spending time cleaning them up. They're putting them out there with extras and selling them. You know, I see people react to the prices sometimes of collector's edition Blu-rays, and I just think, you know, back in the 90s, I would spend $125 on one movie on Laserdisc. So what are you complaining about?
And
but yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, but you're absolutely right. I mean, us people who collected every format imaginable, Laserdisc was kind of, but Laserdisc was actually, wasn't that just a little less than rent to own VHS in that market? Because wasn't it a little bit, because I thought that the whole point was that not a lot of people had Laserdisc.
Well, not a lot of people had Laserdisc, but definitely better picture than VHS.
Yeah.
And for a long time, it was the only way you could get anything in widescreen if you wanted it in widescreen.
With commentaries and stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Criterion started that, too. So
amazing.
Exactly. But to get back to your original question, the only thing I can think of is the one movie that probably none of us is ever going to see, London After Midnight, the Lon Chaney.
Oh, yeah.
Vampire movie that has been lost for a long time and probably will never resurface.
The film was believed that the only whether it's negative or a copy was in the MGM Vault 7 Fire, if I'm not mistaken, right?
You could be right.
Yeah, I think that's where, as well as I think all of the negatives for all the cartoon shorts for like Tom and Jerry, for that matter. Going to some comments real fast. Emily, also known as Crunchy Soap, and I kept calling her Crunchy Soup for the longest time, not purposely. The classic Universal monster movies are some of my absolute favorites, particularly Bride of Frankenstein. You know, since we had Bill on last week, we talked a lot about Frankenstein. But if you're looking at those set of films, do you have a favorite of the Frankenstein films?
I do. And I did listen to your discussion with Bill, and Bill and I are friends. We've known each other for not as long as you and I have known each other, but for quite a while.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of on the same, similar wavelength. My favorite is Son of Frankenstein.
Yes.
Partly because of the depth that it can get into because of its running time being so much longer than the other movies. I admire James Whale's movies, but I'm not a great fan of his style in so much as the humor, the comedy that he injects into his films doesn't resonate with me. So although I do love Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein, and Bride especially for the music, the Son of Frankenstein's got the tone and the performances that I prefer out of those movies. I like the later movies as well, but Son of Frankenstein pips them all.
I think it does for me as well. And at the risk of retreading on a conversation from last week, I do laugh because I feel like I want to say that it's a ripoff of Young Frankenstein, which is absolutely not true, absolutely impossible. But I just, you know, it's just the parody sometimes is really pretty spot on when you look at Young Frankenstein.
Yeah, right.
Unbelievable.
It's like trying to watch Zero Hour after you watch Airplane. you just can't believe it exists.
Absolutely. And, you know, looking at it, and just like I'm just looking through the films, and by the way, I mean, like we said, this book currently isn't available, but it is a beautiful, beautiful book that's been put out by Telus Publishing out in the UK. One of the things I see like on the cover here, and you know, I do feel like partially why I want to talk about these films so much is simply the fact that, to your point earlier, how unbelievable it is that we can have these in such quality, and Nosferatu being on the front, a fantastic transfer, and this is kind of the way to really. You know, how lucky we are to watch these. And I also, like I have on Blu-ray, I have Faust. And it's, once again, such a beautiful, expressionism film that just, I don't know. I mean, I it's hard to watch sometimes, but the visuals on Faust is utterly stunning.
Yeah. The shot that takes you across the landscape all the way from the shout or the scream is an amazing shot. And I did when this book came out initially, I did a promo video, a commercial for it. You can find it on YouTube.
Sure.
And I put clips of all the movies in, and that was the clip from Faust. One of the clips that I chose from Faust was him looming over the village
yes.
in his cloak
at the beginning of the film, right?
That's one of the shots that I got the most questions about. What is that from?
Yeah.
Because it's not a familiar movie to most people.
No, no.
You know, even among people who watch a lot of silent films, they're more likely to be familiar with Nosferatu and not familiar with Faust.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Why don't we do this, Stephen? Let's go ahead. Let's take our first break because I want to get into some discussions about silent films. There's a lot that we can talk about here. And if anyone has questions for Stephen Hill about any films that you find interesting, put them in there and we can talk about them. And we'll talk more about that. You're listening to Ghost Box Radio on AM 950. And don't forget to join us on Tuesday, Halloween night. We're doing a very special 3-hour episode of Ghost Box Radio, and we're doing it live from Stillwater, Minnesota, where the building that Midwest Witchery and Healing is located, and it's going to be part radio show, part paranormal investigation. We're going to be breaking away. We have people in different parts of the building that we're going to be doing all sorts of different sort of paranormal investigations with. And then we're going to be bringing on some people to just have some nice Halloween conversations. So it's really something to look forward to. We've not done this before, but we are very excited to do so. And we'll have Adam here at the station. He'll be helping out. Are you excited for it?
Yep, I'll be captaining this 3-hour tour on the SS Minnow that is AM 950, and hopefully we get rescued at the end of it.
Haunted AM 950. You'll be here by yourself, I know.
And honestly, I am thinking about bringing my REM pod and putting it back in the transmitter room where the lights have come on before, and I'm going to bring my recorder and set it on the steps where I've heard something coming up and down the steps. But nobody showed up.
No, let's do it. I mean, 'tis the season. We got a couple of comments that I want to get to. First one is actually about Adam. Lynette asked the question, how come we can't see Adam? Is he invisible? And the answer to that is really it's for your own protection.
It really is,
Lynette, that we don't showcase Adam.
You ever see The Ring? Yeah, that's what happens when you see me after 5 days.
Though, you know, you could argue the point that seeing you is better than seeing me. We work in radio. There's a reason why we look the way we do. We work in radio. So
also we've only got one camera.
And we also got one camera. So so we got that. Now Emily also says, and this is more of a comment, when we're talking about the Frankenstein episode, she's like, shoot, I missed that conversation. My littlest has been going through sleep weirdness. Just as a reminder to everybody, you can find past episodes of this show on ghostboxradio.com. We have a lot of the shows there, so take a listen. Now, to our guest, Stephen Warren Hill, who is very well knowledge about all these wonderful films, and for someone like myself who actually is friends with him on Facebook, and I see that, you know, you're watching what, like a movie a night or something like that, and then you're also going through your CD collections. You're like, I'm on the letter N right now. And I mean, do you? And then also, you also are owner of the largest Doctor Who online community, Gallifrey Base. Do you do human things? Do you do stuff like what the rest of us do? Or are you just kind of – is your fingers like a USB and it's plugged into computers all the time, making sure that nothing goes wrong on these forums and stuff?
Well, I have a really good staff for the forum.
You do.
And they take care of it most of the time.
You do.
So I don't have to worry about that so much as I used to. As far as I work from home, mm-hmm. and I have a TV right here next to me, and I can usually have a movie on while I'm working. And I trade off between listening to music or watching movies. ever since I started listening to albums, I've been keeping track of what albums I listen to. So I can tell you exactly how many times I've listened to whatever album you want to ask me about. And movies I've been a little less careful about keeping track of, but I'm trying to keep track of now, and hence me posting about all the movies that I've watched since the last time I posted, and what ratings that I give them. Because sometimes I'm seeing movies for the first time still.
That, well, because only because they're in the theater for the first time. So what is it about us? I'm going to lump myself into that. You know, we are connoisseurs of media. And I say that almost as if we're kind of separate from a lot of other people in that regard, because others can say, yeah, I watch a lot of stuff, but they don't understand. I mean, look at behind you. I mean, that's probably a very minuscule part.
Just what I've gotten in the last month or two.
Exactly. No.
Yeah.
What is it about us that not only do we want to watch it, but we want to keep track of it as well? And that we, I got this that. Is, yeah, I got
yeah,
that.
Yeah. This I just got today.
That bless bless Warner Archive.
Yes, very much. Yeah.
And also when Universal, and was this through Kino? I can't remember. They would do like the four movies, the four horror movies, like from the 30s and 40s. Like, I think that's where Black Cat was part of it. You know which collection I'm talking about? There's like eight volumes or something like that.
Oh, Shout Factory.
Oh, Shout. Out. That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
No, Universal Classic Horror Movies, Volume 1.
Whatever. Yeah. No, those are great transfers, great films.
The lesser Universals, which are in some ways just as good as the other ones.
Totally, yeah. Totally. So yeah, we have all that. Now Emily has a question. I think it's a really good question. Love your thought on this. She asked, "Do you think that the talkies took something away from older horror?"
Well, one of my favorite actors of all time is Lon Chaney.
Yeah.
Senior, I'm talking about. And he only did one talkie because he died too young, far too young. And in his case, the answer is yes, for sure, because his supreme talent came from being a silent film actor. I don't think he's as effective when you can hear him talking in the remake of The Unholy Three. And I don't think he would have continued being such a successful actor. He was such a big star at the time when he died. I've read accounts of, you know, how crowded, how many people were there for his service and everything. But I think we would have lost something with him moving into the talkies. However, the talkies really adjusted quickly and came into their own. People talk about how creaky Dracula is and Frankenstein, but then Bride of Frankenstein, we bring in Franz Waxman to do the score, and all of a sudden the movie kind of comes to life with music, and the whole thing coalesces into movies like, you know, this really feels like a package. You know, a whole ball of wonderfulness of movie.
Yep.
That they really adapted quickly to make the sound movies and make the sound work for them rather than against them. And then that's really why you also have to watch those movies from 1930, 31, 32, very open-minded and kind of patient with how technically unskilled they seem to be in a lot of ways, because man, that must have been the toughest time to make a movie. 1929, 1930.
Absolutely. And talked about it before, like Todd Browning doing Dracula. I mean, I think it's very stifled, but you know, what shines through is Bela Lugosi. And if there was a silent film, we would have lost out on his dialogue, which he is very good at that. And it's interesting too that you have, you know, Todd Browning with a basically what looks like a, you know, kind of looks like a silent film, and it's paced as a silent film, I think. And then James Whale, even Frankenstein is way different in direction and in pacing, and they're not that far apart at all as far as releases.
Right.
So it is interesting, and you're right. I think you're absolutely right. I feel like that the learning curve was being picked up very, very, very quickly. And it was good to see that, you know, obviously like the makeup of, you know, Frankenstein is you know so it's so good, and it you know it makes it good to know that like Lon Chaney with the work that he done with makeup that part was also progressing very quickly as well.
Chaney definitely led everybody in makeup, and but Universal developed an incredible makeup department, and they did the job really well for a long time.
They did, and you know, and maybe I'm just stuck in time myself, but I no matter what I've ever seen of Frankenstein post Universal films, never has hit that sort of like wonderment to me as those films, apart from the monsters, I guess. But you know, everything else, granted, they can't touch that design. They can't, no one else could ever go anywhere near it, but it just, everything that comes through, even like the Hammer stuff is just like, they're just not, to me, they're just not as good.
I have to agree with you, that there's, it's just too iconic. You can't even come close to it.
No.
Approaching it. Because it's so cemented in people's minds as the look of the Frankenstein creation that you can't get away from it.
And do you feel like we're missing a beat, or even Universal is missing a beat, that there isn't any way that they could bring back those designs, new type of films, reimagined, and create something and keep a franchise going? I just feel like that no one wants to attempt that. Obviously, there's a new Frankenstein in the works. Del Gormo, whatever. See, I'm never
Del Toro.
Good. Del Toro. I knew that I was wrong, and I'd like, gosh, I'm a fraud. Still, I mean, that's going to be a very different sort of piece, obviously. But I want to see films. I guess I just want to see the films that have already been made. So I guess why don't I just watch those films then, right? I mean, honestly, really, what's the point?
There are a lot of Universal Monster fans who really strongly wish for a revival of those classic creations in on the big screen. But I just don't see how it can possibly work these days with the audience is expecting more, rapid, fast-paced movie with a lot of action, and the attempts that they've made don't just, you know, sometimes they're all right. The Wolfman with Benicio del Toro was okay. Some praise it very highly. The makeup was wonderful, but it just feels like you're taking something that should be slower paced and cramming it into 20 minutes of screen time and then trying to expand around it. And, and I don't know if it'll ever work. I'd love for it to. I would love to see for a long time, I wished for, after the three Mummy movies with Brendan Fraser, I wanted a movie where his character goes to the Amazon and finds the creature from the Black Lagoon. I thought that would have been wonderful, and Stephen Sommers could have pulled it off. But that series ended in some mild disappointment, and we never got another one of those. And let's not talk about Tom Cruise.
I'm just about to. Okay, but you are absolutely right. I mean, that was always something like no one ever said that's the direction they're going to go. But I also thought, gosh, you could go anywhere with those characters, and it doesn't have to be the Mummy, which that to me kind of feels like the closest, because Emily in the comments also says, basically she says she would love to see what we're talking about, but she agrees that it wouldn't work. She feels the classic feel is just gone. I would say that those films got us closest to that, and I think that was the intention, as well as the homage to other 50s type films in that area. So,
yeah. Stephen Sommers' first Mummy movie, the one with Brendan Fraser, it surprised a lot of people. It surprised me. I was looking forward to it, but I didn't know what to expect. And what I got was really carefully done and very pleasing to most audiences. So, you know, it was a winning situation. And if we could have gotten more like that, you know, he could have, his character could have gone on. And then they tried to do Van Helsing and kind of missed the mark. And it made me wish more that they could have stuck with Brendan Fraser's character.
Totally.
And the team that they had built up, the ensemble cast from that movie.
Now, we saw in August the film Last Voyage of the Demeter. What did you think of that?
I have not seen that yet.
Oh, look at that. My gosh. We got
it's
one.
Sitting over there. No, I haven't seen it yet.
It just came out. You have just you picked it up right away. My gosh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I pre-order almost everything.
God, it's amazing. It's amazing.
Otherwise, I forget. If I don't order it right away, I forget. And then 2 years later, I go, that came out?
Right. Well, it'd be interesting to get your thoughts on it when you see it. Because it's very interesting. And Adam and I did see, and we talked about it a bit a while back. But it's a very interesting, as you know, very interesting film that's very much just a piece of the Dracula novel. Emily also says, and this is what I was also going to say, when we talked about a surprise that some of these films have come out, let alone in beautiful quality, she mentions Mystery Science Theater 3000 made a 50 horror movie lover. But in some ways, that was the only way we could see some of these films was as MST3K episodes, which kind of like, you know.
And the condition of those prints that they used added to their ability to make fun of them. Of course, they would make jokes about missing frames and things like that. But when you see those movies in restored format, and I'll give you an example, because just recently released, within the last couple of weeks, double feature Blu-ray of The Giant Gila Monster and The Killer Shrews, the prints of these movies are wonderful, and The Killer Shrews becomes a movie that you realize that's not that bad for a low, almost no budget movie where they put carpets over dogs to be shrews. And it's better than you think it is. But the prints that they used to use on MST3K would never let you feel that way about the movie.
No.
Right. And you could never see a movie that might be okay underneath it all. So that's another benefit that we get from these restorations that we're getting. I can't say enough about how wonderful it is to get these new scans of, the original camera negatives and see these movies like we never have seen them before.
So you're never going to be one of those people who think that in some cases lesser quality, for nostalgia's sake, even is all right sometimes. And my case in point, and I hate to bring up this series, it's one that I don't know if you heard of, it's called Doctor Who, and sometimes I like to go back to the VHS recordings. I actually bought off of eBay a lot of about 20 off-air tapes from WQEX in Pittsburgh of Doctor Who. And I don't know if you know or not, Steve, that before each episode, there was someone introducing the episode from the station. Mm. One of them was the guy who played Handyman Negri, because that was Pittsburgh where Mr. Rogers was in. And they got it wrong every time. They got the names wrong. They got everything. And when one of them, the female presenter, she had to explain the name of the device, the computer from Time Monster, which has a very questionable name. And she just look on her face is like, am I really having to say this on the air? But then you go into these kind of, very low quality things. I guess that's nostalgia. You don't find that for any of the films at all, that you kind of miss some of the kind of the crustiness of some of these films?
Well, I guess I feel like I spent enough time with the crusty old prints on the television prints that have been run through a telecine for years and are so beat up that you can barely follow what's going on. I think I've seen them all that way, and to see them the way they were meant to be seen is new.
Yeah.
So I can't really say I feel nostalgic for those. I suppose it's kind of it's kind of a unique throwback experience to go back and watch watch that camera copy of Ambassadors of Death, Doctor Who in color that everybody had a copy of back in the '80s. But I at the same time, if I'm going to watch it, I would prefer to watch it in the best quality possible.
Absolutely. Why don't we do this? Let's take our next break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about these films. Also, any questions you have, put them in the chat, and we'll keep this conversation going. You're listening to Ghost Box Radio on AM 950. And join us tomorrow on Ghost Box Radio with Greg Bakken. It's going to be Casual Friday. As always, we could talk about whatever's on your mind. I also have a lot, and I do mean a lot of responses to my question 2 weeks ago about pets in the afterlife. If a pet has visited you, I want to go through those because the night that I was going to do that, I couldn't actually do the show after all. So I want to go through those because a lot of people gave some very, very heartwarming responses. And I think that that is that's very cool. So I want to make sure that that gets honored as well. We are having a conversation with Stephen Warren Hill, author of the book You Can't Get, which is called Silver Screen. 40 Classic Horror Movies, Volume 1, 1920 to 1941. You also did a Volume 2 as well. And, I'm not trying to be rude or anything to people, but you are missing out by not having this. This is a very, very nice book, Steve.
Thank you. I am hoping to get these books back into print. It was written as one book, but from the publisher Telos, they advised we split it to two, because the weight of shipping mm-hmm. would make it more expensive if we did one volume alone than it would be to do two separate volumes. But I'm working on updating and correcting some errors in the books and getting them out. One of the things that I took time to do in these books was tell the reader what the best home video edition was at the time. And that's very, very outdated now. So, things like that are not necessary anymore. There's new information that's out there. So update them some point in the future. That's my hope.
Okay. Nope. That's fantastic. Now, one of the things that we had talked about with Bill was the, which I had heard about, and I think it might have even been in some of the documentaries about Frankenstein, and I find it fascinating. It's one of the things I found really like the cultural difference between 1931 and 2023 mm-hmm. is the idea of that the look of the creature. Frankenstein's creature was so frightening to a lot of people that that the whether it's urban legend or what, that people were fainting in the theater upon mm-hmm. seeing it. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I can say that when I was working on my book, I did find a story, and I apologize now for not actually finding this anecdote. It's somewhere buried in my book, and I can't remember which movie or which person, but what I remember what they wrote, because they said that they were in the movie theater watching whatever the movie was. Let's say it was Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. And at one point, a woman in the audience stood up, let out this scream, and went running out of the theater. And I believe mentioned possibly also seeing other audience members swoon at points. Okay.
Sure.
And described the effect as electrifying, and how it really kind of chilled the audience to the bone at that kind of reaction. Like, yeah, they were feeling it too. They just didn't actually let out the scream and run out of the theater, and how effective and memorable that was until they returned to the theater a couple of weeks later and watched the same movie, and the same person got up at the same time in the movie and screamed and ran out of the theater. So did they actually do that, or was it all a gimmick? It's hard to say for sure, but I'm sure that sometimes it was all planned in advance.
I remember watching the film Misery in theaters, and that part where the sheriff is looking in screen and then his torso blows open from the gunshot. A guy next to me, he all of a sudden hear, "Holy!" And then, you know what? And he runs out of the theater. And about 5 minutes later, he just kind of like slinking back into his seat because he feels so stupid. And no, that wasn't me. That was actually truly somebody else. One thing I wanted to mention to you, Steve, is that have you listened to the podcast, The Extras?
No, I haven't.
You might want to. It's about it's really pretty much about the Warner archive and stuff. And, you know, we're talking about films that just get a lot of love and stuff. And it's not one that I've actually seen, but it's Robot Monster and the, all the care that went into that and stuff. And for a film that was shot over 4 days, the way that they took all the restoration and stuff. And it, to your point, that's exactly it. So
I won't lie. When I got my Robot Monster Blu-ray, the 3D Blu-ray, I wanted to watch it that night on my 3D TV. I was so excited to watch Robot Monster. Now, how unbelievable is that?
What a world!
But it looks incredible.
What a world we live in! What a time to be alive! Blu-ray of Robot Monster. So as we have about we have about 8 minutes left, or so let's talk a little bit about the Val Lewton films.
So as much as I love the Universal horror movies, and I do, absolutely I do, I wish that people loved the Val Lewton RKO movies just as much, because I love them just as much. They're a different tone, they're a different feel, but what they do get right is so awesome. And movies like The Seventh Victim and The Curse of the Cat People, and even the those are some of the lesser known ones, if you consider that I Walked with a Zombie and The Cat People are probably the better known ones. But then there's the ones with Boris Karloff, there's you know, The Body Snatcher, and there's just some amazing work in there. And I know that Martin Scorsese, for example, calls The Seventh Victim as one of the best movies he's ever seen. I have to agree, to agree with him. And I just wish more people would see those movies and appreciate them as much as we seem to already appreciate all of the Universal classics and the other studios too. I don't mean to slight the few Warner Brothers. So I just went to see a screening of Dr. X at a local theater, and Dr. X and Mystery of the Wax Museum. Brand new 35 millimeter prints in color.
So was it a digital presentation, or was it actually from film?
Actual 35 millimeter.
Wow.
And they looked amazing. So I just, you know, there's so many great movies out there, and we don't have to all focus on Bride of Frankenstein, for example, right? As much as awesome as it is, and some people are seeing any of these movies for the first time, go further, dig further. Check them all out.
Well, and you know, it's interesting about that too. When you mention that, when you're talking about that, you know, these films are very, very good. They're not known as well. I always think about like the Max Fleischer, you know, animations and stuff. Everyone looks at it from that period of time. They're looking at like Disney and stuff. But it's one of those same things where, you know, there's some really good things that's out there. You might have to dig a little bit more. But you know, all these studios were doing things that, you know, experimental, I don't know if I like that word, but, you know, certainly doing things differently than the ones that we remember the most. If people want to find these films, are they easily available, or are there like a collection of them, or?
Well, most of them, what I think of as available is
well, you go looking
physical media.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
what so many people think of as available is where can I stream it right now?
Mm-hmm.
And I can't answer that question.
No.
I know that there's a Universal Horror channel on Freevee. And I know that right now a bunch of the Universal movies are on, I think, Amazon Prime for free, but they'll probably disappear after Halloween.
True.
And they're Universal movies, so whatever service does the Universal stuff, I
Peacock is running a bunch of those on a collection.
Peacock has them, yeah. Yeah, that's okay. Right. Peacock, yeah.
Yeah.
But what about the RKO ones, though? Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that they're going to turn up on Turner Classic Movies, but I don't know if they're available for streaming anywhere. Almost all of them have come out on Blu-ray. Not all of them, unfortunately. The Seventh Victim has yet to come out on Blu-ray. And I think I Walked with a Zombie is rumored to be in the hands of Criterion Collection. So hopefully we'll see that someday,
mm-hmm.
but it's not out yet. Most of these movies are out on Blu-ray in high definition in wonderful restored editions. And I understand that they cost money, but you're really getting value for your buck. I got to tell you that.
You know, it's so funny when you talked about the streaming were available. That actually never even occurred to me. That wasn't what I was asking. It was about the physical media because, like you, I'm a collector. So it's funny if it's available on streaming, I'll still get the physical disc. But I might watch it on streaming because I'm too lazy to go upstairs or I'm too lazy to go in the other room and grab it. And, you know, but if I really want to watch high quality, good picture and with, you know, extras, then obviously the disc. I mean, and that's should we be worried that will go away? That not only physical media, but because with that going away, it's probably more likely most extras are going to go away as well.
Mm-hmm. Should we be worried? I think we shouldn't waste time being worried because there's nothing we're going to be able to do about it.
Right.
It's going to happen. But there's been so much coming out recently. And believe me, folks, physical media is not dead yet.
No.
You would be amazed at how much is still coming out in better and bigger editions all the time. And to get the Universal's put out two separate collections of four of their classic horror movies on 4K.
Yeah.
And they look incredible.
They do.
And just a side note, for those of you watching the same movie on Blu-ray and on a 4K disc on the same television, they're not going to look too much different. But trust me, they really are different.
Yep.
They really are better. So go for the 4K. It's hard to explain that without getting too technical.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And for those who don't understand, there's a lot of videos on YouTube that will give you the comparisons as well. And you could really see I can really see some huge difference there for sure. And I don't know. You know, as we have about a minute and a half left or so, I want to switch gears on you and talk really quickly about something that you're working on that's going to happen in November at the end of the month. Okay. for people who are Doctor Who fans, are part of a group that puts on a big Chicago Doctor Who convention every Thanksgiving weekend, Chicago TARDIS. That's coming up fast. But you all have a wonderful guest list this year.
Yeah, we've got a lot of doctors coming. I'm looking forward to seeing director Rachel Talalay as a guest.
Yeah.
It's going to be Thanksgiving week. It's going to be the weekend of the Doctor Who's 60th anniversary. And we'll have a new episode that weekend, which is just mind-boggling.
It is.
And I'm the program director for Chicago TARDIS, so you'll see me all weekend long up there.
Yeah, absolutely. And to get tickets, go to chicagotardis.com, correct?
Yes, that's right.
That's going to be great. I've been to a number of them, and it's always so much fun to go there and see friends and stuff. So I'm hoping that everyone has a chance. And Minnesota is a hotbed for Doctor Who fans, so consider going out there. Consider checking it out. It's a fantastic convention.
Yeah, thank you.
No, thank you very much. Stephen Hill, I hope that you come back. We could talk more movies sometimes. This is fun. We didn't even get to all the stuff we wanted to talk about.
That's true. We could talk for a long, 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 long time.
and so we shall. Thank you very much for being part of the show. Tomorrow's Casual Friday. We're going to talk about Pets in the Afterlife. We're going to talk about Exorcist Believer and anything you want to talk to. Everyone, have a fantastic night, and we'll see you tomorrow.